This conference is being recorded.
Okay. I swear that it waits until somebody comments.
Yeah. Well, okay, what do we have new from last time? I have to admit I haven't done much since the last thing I sent around.
Well, I started a bit, but don't yet have it in a form that it's worth sending around. But I have gone read through the whole, all the sections, and tried reworking it a little bit. It's way too long in its current state, and it doesn't really flow very well yet. But there's a lot of the basics are there. I have a couple questions. Does anybody else want to say anything first before I go to that?
I would say, I know we left it last time. Michelle had agreed to kind of streamline the paper and try and make it in one voice instead of four voices. And I think I remember we said we were going to check with Tisha about whether she was interested in doing that as well. I don't know if...
Absolutely.
Michelle had done that or where Tisha is and...
Yep. I don't want to take anything away from you, Michelle. I think you've done a lot of the work already, and I think you should be first author no matter what. But I am willing to do this for you since I think you're kind of overwhelmed right now.
Well, you know, I would not take it at all as if you're taking something away from me. It would be a pleasure to give you this.
Okay, but I really do think that Michelle should be first author. When we get this done.
No, you guys, really, I really don't feel that way. I think over the 2 years, we've all had, you know, various moments where we've all been done more or done less, and I think we're quite even. I'm quite happy with the alphabetical order, but thank you for
that. We'll have to figure everything out.
Well, I think what we can do is when we get a little closer, it looks like we're not going to be fighting over it, but at the default at this point, I would think Michelle and Tisha would be lead authors and Michael next and me last, but we can wait until we get a little farther along.
Tisha, if I finish working on I've done a bunch of small changes so far. Mm-hmm. If I were to send it to you, say tomorrow, in the state that it is now, and maybe you picked it up for a little bit, would that be all right with you?
Mm-hmm. Can I ask everybody one favor though?
Yeah.
I'm working on a grant with some people that's due the 28th. So would you be opposed to not a lot of work being done on it until after the 28th of February?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be opposed to that if that doesn't include the value of zero. If you have a grant to work on, I would say you should work on this zero amount until that's done. That'd be my recommendation.
Yeah, we're not under a real time pressure here, right?
Yeah.
It works nice because I have spring break actually right after the 28th, so...
I don't see any problem in delaying until after that.
Yeah. Okay.
Me either. I think that's great. In fact, I've got my children have 2 weeks of vacation coming up. So
yes.
Any little bit of window of concentration time that I'm going to have in those 2 weeks, I have to dedicate to some PhD classes. So I think that's absolutely fine, Tisha, because I wouldn't get anything done in those 2 weeks anyway.
Okay.
So perfect.
Actually, if we're talking about the authorship, I would actually put out the question of... does it matter to anybody professionally about the order of the authors? I know that Villanova states that they don't care whether something's a first authorship or collaborative as long as I've done the work on it. So they don't care. But I don't know if any of the three of you have any professional leanings about whether it's important to be first, second, third, fourth, whatever.
It's not an issue for me.
It's not really an issue for me either.
And for me, too, it makes no difference whatsoever.
Okay. And then to complete the authorship question... should we have a discussion with Bob and Andy about whether they should be authors? I think the answer is probably no, that they should get an acknowledgement.
Yes.
But the advice that I've tried to follow, and I think it's been wise, is always discuss this ahead of time, not ex post facto.
Yeah, good advice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Could we touch base with them and just double check that what their expectations are?
Yeah.
Yeah. How should we do that? I don't know if they'll be listening to this necessarily, or we might just contact them directly.
We should just contact them directly with the straight-up question about it.
I could do it.
I'm sorry?
Well, how should we do it? I mean, I could do it, or Michael, or Tisha, or Michelle, any one of us could do it. But we should decide maybe who's going to broach the issue.
Doesn't matter to me.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter to me either. I'm happy to do it.
Okay. Nope. Why not? Go for it, huh?
Okay, it's yours, Michael.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, Michelle, in the work that you have done on it just this last week or so, are there any tips for us in terms of what we might, if there's something we ought to be thinking about or working on in the interim?
There's a couple little things. One of them is I think we have too many lists throughout this, and I think we have to get better at synthesizing the research that other people have done. Rather than, like for me, I have a list of the different components of variability, and Patricia has a list of what students need to know from sampling distributions from the Bob and Beth and Joan article, I think. I think we need to put some of those into paragraphs and sentences to shorten our article a bit, and also just to show a little bit more synthesis rather than just repeating what other people have said. What do you think about that?
Well, that'll be a part of the synthesis. So, well, the question would be, what's the best way to do that? That is, we could each do something, or we could let Tisha take a shot at having a similar kind of format for all of us and paring that down. I guess what my stance would be, whatever is useful for us to do, we should do, but there's going to be a certain amount that'll just take somebody looking at the whole thing together.
Right.
And I think we've said this before a lot, and to pare it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what I've been trying to do a little bit.
But I can say it would be helpful for me if we have some vague skeletal sense of what each section was supposed to look like. So kind of discussion, reading of the research, statement of the concepts, discussion of the assessment items that measure them, or something like that. We can each try and follow somewhat of a similar format until one person really comes together and brings it all into one voice.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's what I was trying to do in the last day or two, was to do that for the section on variability, just because that was the section that I was working on. And I did do a little bit of reorganizing. We'd take the section on the sampling distribution and move it to the end. So I cut and pasted that, took out a bunch of the comments on, I can't remember when it was, but at one point I had sent out a list of key ideas that students should understand about sampling distributions, and then within that tried to identify which of our questions, related to each of those. So I was trying here to get rid of all that detail and just look at the main ideas and moving that all to the back. I think we had said last week that we would try to make it, okay, here's an introduction, here's the phrase, each one, here's the intro to the concept, here's some of the literature that's been done, here's the parts that are related to, that we think are important for sampling distributions, and here's a couple of examples of the test items that we're trying to get at to identify, as you said, accurate perceptions and misconceptions. Dale was a bit less in that format. Dale, you kind of worked into your literature review, your review of your concepts. You worked a couple of problems into that to give examples right as you were talking about what the concept was. So I was trying to think of a way to try and separate those a little bit, and make the link a bit more explicit about the problems with misinterpretations of samples that we think could cause difficulties with sampling distributions.
Yeah.
Because that didn't come through as much.
Yeah, I think my sense of it was that part of the issues with sampling is relevant and part not. The issue of random selection and so forth is not quite as intrinsic to understanding sampling distributions, I think, but the shapes of distributions and expecting to look would be key.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. I mean, I could do some revision on that, or we could, let when Tisha takes a look at it, she could kind of give specific, after looking at how this all fits together, make where she would like to see us do some revisions or what direction that would go.
Okay.
I mean, if we have time, that might be an efficient way to go.
Okay. There was another question. Oh, yes. I wanted to. We had talked last time about looking for the question about reading histograms, that we wanted to add it to the WISE site. And in fact, Tisha actually had that question in what she had sent us all. I just hadn't read through it yet. I think it's on page 17 of the document that Michael sent out last week. There's a question about, hello?
Yep, sorry, that was just me. I'm transferring phones. I'm at home now.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome home.
Thank you.
Michael, coming in.
So she put that on here, and it did have already had the changes that we had talked about last time, where the question, it was inspired by Chance, Delma, and Garfield, and saying listed below is a histogram for a set of test scores. Although I think we shouldn't say listed below because you don't list a histogram. You just say below is a histogram representing a set of test scores or something like that.
Fine with me.
And then we say, what do the numbers on the horizontal axis represent? What do the numbers on the vertical axis represent? How many people receive scores higher than 4? Because remember, that was the one we thought was a bit odd in the original question. And so she already has the changes incorporated here. So that Dale, are you on the same page with me here?
Yeah, that's right. I think I remember seeing that, so I dig that out. Yeah.
So that was the question that we said we'd like to add to the test on the WISE site if it's not too much of a problem to do so.
Okay, no, we can do that. Is there anything that we think would come off? Is there anything that's not helping us in any way? I mean, it's fine to leave the other ones on, but if there's some question that we think, well, it's not really adding anything.
Oh, you mean of the whole WISE of everything? I thought you meant of the questions related to this particular question.
But I mean of all having that test, just to keep it no longer than we need to have it.
Right. I don't remember if there were any that we wanted to take off. Do you guys remember if there are any that we had decided in the end we weren't going to? Well, Tisha, you asked the question here about whether we wanted to keep the one about the biology and the psychology test.
Yeah, and I think Michael has convinced me that it's good to see what sorts of responses people give. If you see someone with a complete understanding of discussing center and variation, I'd be interested to see how they do on all the other questions.
Okay.
I still think we're very much in a pilot stage, and so
mm-hmm.
I don't think we're hurting ourselves by gathering information.
By leaving it there. Okay, let's leave it then. And I wanted to ask you, Tisha, I remember at one point, as I was reading through this, I remember at one point we had actually looked at the pink and black classes and discovered that the difference in the standard deviation was really, really minimal.
I know, and I don't remember.
Yeah.
Did we ever go back and do anything about that?
I don't think so, but I don't remember.
We still have it in there. We have, for which class is the standard deviation greater? And yeah, that one.
Yeah, I remember. I remember putting it in. I think Dale, you calculated it, and I said, "Oh, let me do that too." And it was, yeah. I mean, they're indistinguishable.
Very small. Yeah.
Did we talk about changing the graph, or did we talk about not looking at that question? I don't even remember that.
I think we talked about changing the graph.
Okay.
We talked about that one a good bit because there you've got the problem that you need to deal with proportional reasoning because you have fewer people in the black class than in the pink class. So you're looking at shape, but you're also looking at different proportions of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that class is a pretty tough one, that one. One of the things I'm curious about for that one is, do we care that much about the question, is the distribution of the scores symmetric, positively skewed, or negatively skewed? Because I remember it looked like when we got the sample responses that maybe a third of it, I can't remember, but or half said negatively and half said positively. It seemed like people didn't really know which direction you were supposed to say that was skewed.
Right.
But pretty much everybody knew it was either symmetric or skewed.
Right. I would ask the question of whether there's some correlation between how they answer that question and some of our other questions. Hmm. You know, or is it an understanding of really, of, I don't know. I mean, yeah. If the people who all said, you know, I don't forget which way it is, the correct answer, are they the ones who are getting, you know, all the other questions right? Because if so, then that's exactly the kind of thing we want to identify.
It seems so that it's not really a measure of understanding. It's a measure of just labeling. You know, what does negative? Anybody can look at that and see. Well, you've got, you know, tail goes off in one direction or the other. Hardly anybody said that the black distribution was symmetric, but
right.
Didn't know what the labels were.
Mm-hmm.
And on the first one with the pink distribution, I think virtually everybody says it's symmetric. You know, so that doesn't give us too much information either.
So you're saying they're not confusing the concept of skewness,
right.
Just the labeling of it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at with the was what I was asking.
Yeah, it's not really an understanding of the concept of skew. It's just labeling the difference. And that is, you know, it's kind of, in some sense, arbitrary, you know, how you choose to name it. But I would expect you would find a correlation, though, that the people who do better overall will, in general, be people who will know the, you know, the labels, proper labels.
So one thing
I guess I ask because I'm trying to get at, you know, what's for that particular one, what is it that we're trying to get at? What are we trying to measure there? Just to make the link more clear.
I think the third question is probably the strongest one, which asks which class did better, or overall which did better, because there we separate the confound of the number of scores, you know, high scores versus the... you know, the shape, you know, like the black distribution has actually the same number or fewer big scores, but yet it's because it has so few small scores. And that one does spread people out quite a bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking through some of the data that Dale sent out this morning, and I know we still have from last summer with Michelle, students at your university and here at Winona State took this.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think about misconceptions. I was attempting to sit down and write, and I ended up looking at data. I'll tell you something else I found this morning, too. But thinking about misconceptions, and one of the answers that showed up more than once in that Part C, how did you decide this, was because the pink class was symmetric. That was their answer. The pink class did better because that has a symmetric distribution.
It's prettier.
I'm wondering if Part A were not there, do you think as many students would?
I would say that. That's interesting.
Because we're kind of priming them to be looking at the symmetry.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the answer. Somebody says the pink because it's symmetrically distributed.
I don't know.
Pink because it's a normal distribution.
Is that another response?
Pink is using a bell curve.
Yeah, normal is good.
When they say it did better, is it clear that we mean which one had the higher average score? Or
I don't know.
In terms of,
which one did better on the exam? I think the higher average score is too much detail, but maybe we should say did better on the exam.
Yeah, well, it says, overall, which class did better on the quiz?
On the quiz, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we debated that at one point, and we said we didn't want to ask which one did better, had a better average, because we were trying to see whether they were reasoning on averages.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the wrong answers on that one can be broken in two major categories. One is where they focus on the normality, the shape, and the other where they focus on the number of cases versus the proportion of cases. Yeah.
For D in this one, I think there's two ways. The one where it says, for which class is the standard deviation greater? I think there's two possibilities that we could do here. One would be to just change the sentence to not ask about standard deviation, but for which class has greater variability in scores. And that way, you're going to see whether or not, when they think of variability, that whether or not whether they're just looking at the range of scores or whether they're looking at some measure of spread from the center, which, in fact, would both be correct if you're just talking about variability, but we might see what's their kind of default reasoning there, since we know that the standard deviation, you can't really tell a difference in these two with the actual numbers. So that would avoid the problem of changing the graph if we just change the question. Because we have two other questions that are specifically on standard deviation. So we already have two questions in the test that do get at standard deviation.
So you're thinking about variability. It's a little less precise unless we are thinking, because they won't necessarily think of that as variance per se. They may think of
Right. I'm saying maybe that could be of interest when you ask them, you know, which class has more variability in scores or more variation in scores, something like that. It could be of interest to see, do they just look at the range? Do they just say, well, pink is better, has more variability because scores go from 2 to 9, whereas black scores only go from 2 to 8? Or will they somehow reason on standard deviation?
Yeah. Well, in some ways, you know, it wouldn't be wrong to just focus on how many different scores did they hit, 2 to 9 versus 2 to 8, and so there's more variability in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Well, that's what I mean. If we say a question, like if we switch the question, then there could be two right answers, which we may not want, but it could give some insight as into what do they consider when you ask them which one has greater variability. Or we can just change the graph. I mean, it doesn't matter that much to me. I'm just trying to figure out.
Right.
I'm just remembering that we had that problem with the actual standard deviations being virtually identical.
So I was thinking at one point that we changed that question specifically to for which class is the standard deviation greater, because we wanted to isolate whether or not they were looking at average deviation from the mean. I don't know. I was thinking in one of the earlier versions,
yeah,
it said for which class is the variability greater or something. I mean, we can go back, I don't care, but I don't remember for sure.
So I know that, I had it on my list, you know, one of the things to do this past week, and I did spend a little bit of time on that this morning, is to look at what are the concepts that are important for each of these four prerequisites. And when thinking about distributions, in my mind, I had it separated into kind of graphical summaries versus numerical summaries. And the numerical summaries could be range, interquartile range, standard deviation, any of those. And I wonder whether we want to specifically isolate those or not. You know, can we figure out, with a couple multiple choice questions, are students looking at variability based only on range?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can we pick two graphs that have the same standard deviation but different ranges?
Yeah, well, that we kind of have that here. In fact, some of the answers do say that. I mean, here answer 10 said black because of the range.
Right, again, I don't have my computer open in front of me, so I don't have all that.
Yeah, Dale, what are you looking at there?
Oh, I'm looking at a summary that we had, let's see, as of August 26th. I don't have the most recent one here. But it just shows the answers that a bunch of people gave. We had like 18 people at that time. And there are those 18, I think we can pull apart. I can just read the explanations. One of them says, It's black because it results from a bell curve. Wow, that doesn't make sense. The next one says black because 7 is the highest in the black. That means there are more respondents who said black as an answer, which doesn't make sense. Here's somebody who's very honest. They said black, and the reason is guess. Another person said pink, but they counted the X's. Well, there are more X's in the pink, so that sounds like they're being fooled by the count. Uh-huh. Another one says pink because the dispersion is wider, which essentially is range. Another one says pink because more scores differ from the mean. And here's one that says black because the scores are farther from the mean. So they're looking at the right kind of thing, but because they're so similar, it's hard to clearly say one or the other. Here's one that says black because it's an asymmetric distribution. So that's a whole different type of reason.
Well, but that's the same as saying that pink is normal.
It's sort of the flip side of saying, that it's not normal. And then the next one says it's a range. And the next one is range as pink because there's a 9 present in the pink but not in the black. And if you remember, there was one observation at the high end in pink, which was a bigger class, and that wasn't there in the black. Yeah, so we can pull out, there's some people who, a lot of people talk about the range as being the key. And so there's range, there's dispersion, and there's the shape. So I think we can pull out kind of what they're looking at, what they think is most relevant. So that one may be useful, even though the answer is really hard to know what the correct answer is by looking at it. But at least one at the reasoning. Maybe in some ways that's better to make it not real obvious.
But I think the goal is to eventually make assessment items that don't require the explanations in order for us to understand what the misconception is, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we could
Although to me, that's, again, kind of the next stage of our research. At this point, I think we're still trying to define, here's our prerequisite knowledge, here's our concepts within each one, discuss them, and then just bring in one assessment example that will help explain that concept or how it's going to be tested to people.
Right.
And so it feels to me like
example.
It feels to me like we're actually approaching this from the other side, talking about our assessment items, and what we really need to do is talk about what the concepts are, mm-hmm. and then go back and see whether the assessments item are testing those concepts.
Yeah. Well,
or maybe that's me. Maybe I haven't read through other people's sections enough to realize, what are the concepts involved in each one.
Well, no, we said we'd try to do that for today, is for each of us to be able to say in a fairly concise way what we think the concepts are. So, yeah, I'm happy to go with your suggestion and try to say for each group here what we think the main concepts are and have a little bit of debate about it.
Can I start off actually with an even more meta question than that? So in thinking, in reading through each of the sections and thinking about what were the prerequisite knowledges, I kind of had in my mind that it's helped me to think about kind of a hierarchy, putting maybe hypothesis testing at the top, which for us is essentially sampling distributions. So in order to understand hypothesis testing, you need to know sampling distributions. We're not focusing on that. We're just starting at sampling distributions. In order to know sampling distributions, in my mind, you need distributions and sampling, thus the name. I think about variability as kind of a subcategory of distributions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes sense to people, if people agree with that. I'm not sure. And I think about, analogously, what prerequisite knowledge do you need for sampling? And I wonder whether we want to, we've had this discussion before, but I wonder whether we want to revisit the idea of randomness or probability, and whether that itself is another prerequisite knowledge for sampling distributions, because that is a prerequisite knowledge for sampling, I think. You need to understand randomness, random selection, before you can understand sampling. I don't know if I'm stating things.
I think Dale addresses that a bit in his. I think he definitely addresses that in what he's written up about that. You know, a lot of students and even teachers don't have a real clear idea of what it means to take a random sample, and even have a certain mistrust about the idea of taking a random sample and trying to draw inferences. That just sort of a intuitive mistrust that you can't really draw a conclusion from just a sample. So I think it's definitely an important issue. And I think Dale does get at that, this idea of random.
For me, is should it be a separate prerequisite area? And if not, what about distribution and variability? What's the real difference between understanding distributions and understanding variability? Because I think about variability being one component of a distribution.
Yeah. Well, the concept of variability is just really crucial in this, in understanding this, I think, the notion that any given sample might be different from any other sample. The issue with distribution comes in when we're trying to describe how to represent that, I think. You know, like when you look at the sampling distribution, what does that indicate? What does that show? And variability is one of the things it shows.
I think that variability is, in some senses, a subcategory of distribution, because certainly when you think of distribution, you think of shape, variability, and center. But I think it's actually wider than just that, because it also, as Dale's saying, it also is very much involved in sampling, that when you take samples, it's just going to be variability, and that variability is predictable. Like the question that you have when you've got drawing, I think it's yellow and blue balls from a jar or something like that. There, the idea of variability is that you don't expect everybody to get, if it's 60% in the jar, you don't expect everybody to get 6 out of 10 red ones, which, you know, is related to distribution, but I think it's still something a little bit to the side. You can talk about variability there without talking about a distribution.
But I'm not sure I would label that the same kind of variability. I would label that as randomness, meaning if you take a random sample from a population, you're not always going to get the same value.
So you have variability.
What does that mean, variability?
Well, that they vary. They're not the same.
And that there's a predictable component of the variability. You know, it's not just random that it's going to change every time and we don't know anything about it, that there is going to be some predictability in the variation that we're going to observe.
Yeah, and I like the framing of that. You know, I like saying that there is variability, but the variability is predictable, and that's what makes the whole field of statistics work, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I like that framing. But I'm not sure I'm convinced that variability applies to sampling.
I was looking for a paper, sorry. And I
mean,
think
sampling,
kind of said this.
The concept of sampling is that you could have 10 balls in an urn, 6 blue and 6 red, and you just pick one at random. You pick 2 or 3.
It'd be hard to have 10 balls and have 6 blue and 6 red.
6 blue and 4 red, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
You know, you pick 3 balls. That's all about the random process. The variability, in my mind, only comes out when you're trying to describe the distribution of either the sample or a population. And therefore, it falls under the distribution category.
Yeah, so
clearly these are all linked.
Yeah, well, the randomness, in my mind, is more like the process by which you do the exercise. You know, how do you select those balls? That would determine whether random or not. But the notion of variable outcomes, that's different from the fact that the process by which you draw the balls. The variability shows up when you compare results from different trials, and we represent that with a distribution. So So,
but by doing that process, you're already up to that concept of a sampling distribution.
If you go beyond just one sample, right?
Right. If you have one sample, you have absolutely no variability.
Right.
But you still need to understand the randomness of it.
But that's more right. That refers to the process by which you collected those three balls. Did you peek and pick out red ones because you like red ones, or you know, was it really truly blind? Were they shaken up, or were the red ones on top? You know, things like that has to do with the process of selecting the sample. And do you need that to understand sampling distributions? I guess that's maybe the nub of the question.
Well, I think you need to understand the random process in order to understand sampling. This is exactly what you know, we just talked about a minute ago.
Yeah, because if you didn't,
clearly you need to understand sampling to understand a sampling distribution.
Yeah, because the sampling distribution that we generate is based on the presumption that the sampling, in fact, is based on a random process.
Right. And we describe that sampling distribution by knowing about distributions and by knowing about variability. So I think variability is, in the literature, used as a generic term for what I would call spread.
There's kind of three lines that they look at. They look at variability within a distribution and variability between two groups. So the difference in variability of one group as opposed to another group.
So that's comparing two spreads, whether that be range or standard deviation or whatever. And then what's the third one?
Yeah. I don't remember.
Michael, are you like seeing variability as something that's different from like variation? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm not seeing it as something different, I think.
Say it one more time for me.
I'm not seeing it as different.
I know. I heard that part. I'm sorry. So when you said that like variability is just what we would talk about, remember we're not supposed to say spread anymore, too. I remember that from the group that's doing
it. I'm thinking butter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But when you said that
dispersion.
You think of it as the dispersion, the spread, and so like sampling variation to you, it's the same, it's just spread?
I'm not sure how to answer that one. I don't use the term sampling variation. I mean, you know, it's a good question. Is that the variation that you get among samples, which is about the random process, or is it the variation of the distribution, of a sampling distribution, in which case it is a dispersion?
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, maybe in talking through this out loud, I'm convincing myself that, you know, it's not a clear term, especially for a non-statistician.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one stuck on this or confused by this?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I don't know. I should probably go look in the literature. I know some people, I read it early on in this process. There was discussion about variability versus variation, not necessarily that they're different things, but about the language, how we use it. I just don't remember what I read.
You know, it seems that might be useful to try to break apart the notion of variability and the predictability of the variability. That is, it's the first step to recognize that samples are varied, they differ. One sample isn't like another. And then it's another step to say, and beyond that, the degree of variability is predictable, or it follows a pattern. Does that make sense? You could separate the notion. The first thing is that things vary. And we have that one question on the sampling distribution where a lot of people get trapped into thinking that you know, they'll all be the same. And that's a real problem. But then beyond that, even if you recognize that samples will differ, to recognize that that's predictable, and you can spot unusual variability. In some ways, that's that candy example with Chang and Alex or whoever gets at that. But it confounds those two things, maybe.
And looking back at what I was trying to say before, that the three different kinds of variability I was looking at was the variability within one sample of data and then variability across samples, which is exactly what you're saying there, Dale, and then the variability across distributions. So it's not just between two distributions, but also between two samples.
I'm sorry.
I remember having these.
Number two and number three. What's the difference between the second and third one?
The second one is across samples, and the third one is across distributions. So I think of the second one more in terms of the fact that there's going to be a variability if you're drawing lots of samples from the same population. There's going to be variability in those samples, and thus there's going to be variability in the sample statistics, but that the variability that we're going to observe in that is going to end up being predictable.
So you're talking about variability of two draws of size 10 from an exponential distribution, in that those two draws of size 10 will be different from each other.
Yes.
And the third one is talking about comparing an exponential distribution with a chi-square distribution.
Or draws
right.
the same,
or a normal, I should say.
As 100.
Right.
Well, or in, even in the population. It doesn't have to be a sample size.
Right.
You can talk about the differences between what a normal looks like and what an exponential looks like.
Right. But the most relevance for sampling distributions would be the rule of sample size. If you take samples of size 10, you get a certain type of distributions across
right.
samples. And then you take samples of size 100, you get a different distribution across samples.
Right.
Well, to come back to your question, Michael, I'm trying to figure out, I remember when Tisha and I were both looking at variability and distribution, they were virtually impossible to separate, actually. We had seen that there had been sort of a whole strain of literature on variability and a whole strain of literature on distribution, but that they were, a lot of them overlapped. There was a lot of interrelation between them.
Right.
So I'm trying to think in terms of what we're trying to get at here in the structure of the paper is what you're trying to suggest, that maybe variability, rather than being its own section, could be a subsection of distribution?
That was my, in thinking about it, that was my image, is that variability is a subsection of distributions if we're thinking about the variability that they've defined as the first or third type, of thinking about the variability within one distribution, which, in all honesty, I think is a little bit of a strange concept because you need to know what the units are and have a sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tell my students that all the time. If you're looking at the, you know, a single box plot, it's kind of hard to describe the spread to me, except to give me what the interquartile range is. It's easier to do when comparing distributions. But that being said, so the first and third, the dispersion of one distribution or two, or comparing two distributions is fine, but that second term of variability doesn't fall under distributions in my mind. And that's why again in my mind I had kind of separated that to the concept of randomness, random selection. And if it's random, it is by definition variable. Because to me the first two are about dispersion. Sorry, the first and third are about dispersion. That middle one is not about dispersion.
No, and in fact, in a lot of the different articles that people have written about it, they talk about that, that it's, there's different kinds, there's all these different kinds of variability that have to be taken into consideration. Even in with Garfield and Benzavie article, they have a section that's, you know, using variability to make comparisons, but then another one is using variability to predict random samples or outcomes.
Yeah.
So looking at the two different areas, one related more to a distribution and one to related more to sampling.
Yeah, and as I think about that, I think calling both of those by the same name is a disservice to statistics. I think that calling them both the same name is muddying the waters. Now, maybe that's what we have to do because that's what students do coming into the class. But I think calling them both by the same name is a problem because in my mind they're not the same.
Just trying to think, what would you call for across samples, other than saying randomness, how would you call it? That, you know, if you take a random sample from one and a random from one from the population, and take another random sample from the same population, that your two samples will be different. And if you calculate a sample statistic relative to that, what word could we use to say that there's there'll be differing values or variability in those values.
I mean, again, I'm happy saying that those are both random events that might not result in the same end product, you know, the same sample mean. Is it appropriate to say there's variability in that? By my definition in English, I would say, I guess, yes. They are not the same. There is variability. So I think the English word is acceptable. And that's the problem, I think, is that the English word does describe both of those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But they are two, again, in my mind, I'm happy to hear what others say as well and have discussion about this, but that those are two different concepts. One is a way of summarizing a distribution. One is a process in which you gather data.
I'm just looking at it's a paper by Chris Wild, The Concept of Distribution. And he starts out talking about, I think, this connection between these two concepts. And he uses the word variation for what I feel you're talking about, Michael, the process. I don't know if that's a coincidence or not.
There's a Shaughnessy paper where he goes to some length at talking about variation and variability and the difference between those two. I think it's the one that we all had to read at one point. Yeah, I think there's been some attempt made to distinguish between those. You're right, Tisha. But in terms of trying to get this paper together, what do you think, guys? Should we keep it as its own section? Because we did kind of look back at the what were the four prerequisites that we've used to inspire ourselves from Garfield. Yeah, they said they suggest prerequisite knowledge includes ideas of variability, distribution, normal distribution, and sampling.
Right. And we
started out with those four.
And we dropped normal, right?
We dropped normal. Yeah. So we ended up with the three.
Right.
Variability, distribution, and sampling.
Okay, so I found another paper this morning from Journal of Statistics Education. I decided, you know, it's been a while since I've looked at all this stuff, and there was a paper published just last August that, you know, my lit review, the papers that I had were before August, right? So I thought, well, that looks like a good one. I'll pull it. It's called Students' Misconceptions in Interpreting Center and Variability of Data Represented via Histograms and Stem and Leaf Plots. And
who wrote that? I didn't read that one.
It's Linda Cooper and Felice Shore. So it is. It's just from 2008, towards the end of the year. And they've got some stuff, I think, that's very pertinent to what we're doing. Here's a quote from the paper. So they're talking about some of the problems students are having with histograms. An implication, for example, is that the conceptual groundwork for student understanding of the central limit theorem may be compromised by the inappropriate assumptions that students can extract meaning from a histogram with regard to mean and variation. So, you know, I think that this should be part of our lit review as well.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading it, the question in my mind is, wow, where would this go? With Michelle's section on the variability or with the section on distributional
mm-hmm.
thinking? And so I think you're right, Michael. It's hard. It's not just hard, maybe even impossible to separate these two.
And I think we can certainly recognize that as we're writing.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's... I kind of feel like if we're using Chance, Dumas, and Garfield's groundwork, I guess, as our frame, that maybe we should keep them as separate prerequisites.
and just discuss the linkage and how closely connected they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the same thing, Tisha. As I was reading yours, I thought I was looking at that question on histograms and thinking, well, maybe that should go in variability because they talked about the difference between horizontal and vertical variability.
Yeah.
You know, with the height of the bars as opposed to the the spread of the value. So I was thinking as I was doing this, I thought, gee, maybe I should put that in the section on variability instead of the section on distribution.
No,
so they are very different.
But, I mean, this paper, it is really interesting. Like they would have a picture of a skewed histogram, and they would ask the students to compute the median. And a lot of students would just look at the values labeled on that x-axis and pick the middle one.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's not understanding what median means.
Or not understanding a histogram. And that's what the authors acknowledge, is that it for them to say.
Well, but our claim is that it's not impossible, right? Because if we ask a few questions that find out whether they understand how to read a histogram.
Right. The impossible part was just from their frame.
Right.
From the way they asked the question.
I mean, I actually took that to heart, and I give an exam today in my class. This is an intro stat methods for math majors. And I actually asked a few really straightforward questions that were probably really stupid in their minds, but it really assessed, do they understand how to read a box plot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what's the first quartile? What's the median?
Mm-hmm.
You know, start off there. And
yeah. How do they do on that?
Well, I've graded probably a dozen or so, and everyone got all of those right.
Well,
you know, these are the math majors, not the non-math majors. I think there's a difference.
Give to the business students. I'll give more variability in response.
Now, when you say variability, no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that was going to throw you off. I regretted it the moment it was out.
Well, just to kind of think where we go with this, I think I agree with the notion that since we started with the, you know, those four concepts and we decide to go with the three, that we should have that still be our, you know, an organizing principle, but that really make a clearer discuss the interconnection between these and how it is hard to separate them really cleanly. But that was our starting point.
Yeah, I would go with that as well. To just keep them and just make very explicit how difficult it is.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things in the literature that mention that connection between the two and how hard it is to separate. So it's not even going to be just us saying that.
Yeah.
Right.
Although, right. For me, that addresses the link between the two. There's still that question of what does variability really mean? Does it include a random sample from a population? Even though we display that with a graph that might show the variability. I'm happy to, you know, let that fester in my mind and annoy me as much as I want. It still move forward on this, you know, on where we are. You know, it sounds like there's consensus on saying, you know, let's stick with the same prerequisite knowledge, which I think for practical sakes is a good idea for our own sanity, too, of moving forward.
Well, and I think there's some precedent in some of the things that I read about variability was that people have used the term both to mean what you're talking about, the spread, and to mean differences in results of random samples.
Right.
So I think it has been used that way. Whether or not that's the best way to use it is certainly an open issue.
Maybe that's a totally
separate paper.
I was just thinking, it's no wonder that our students have problems with these things.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still really annoyed at that lexical ambiguity group, because after Jen presented last time, I still, like, think about every word I say to students saying, how are they misunderstanding what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
We're thinking about sending you over to the lexical ambiguity group, Michael.
You should join one of their conference calls and just ask them this question about variability and see what
they
say.
That's great. But they're not suggesting solutions, right? They're just explaining why students are having a problem.
At least that's where they were.
Probably in the first step. My guess is they're probably aiming to help propose some solutions.
Yeah.
Well, we should think about our next call, too. We're thinking that it would probably be several weeks or a month, maybe even, or sometime, a little bigger lag than recent.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you suggest?
I am going to be gone the week of, it's 2 weeks actually. It's February 21st until March
6th. Okay.
So for me, maybe the early in the week after that, or Thursday or whenever the week after that is good for me.
So the week of then March 9th you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
That should work for me.
Yeah,
and that should give us a bit of time to, I'll spend another couple of days on this, Tisha, and then send it on to you.
Yep, and
that should give us time to get them a bit more solid together, and then we can, on different questions, different sections, maybe we can get back, with you, Michael, and Gail, and just say, how would you feel if we clarify in this direction, or if we rearrange this, or and so on. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, and if we met, you said the week of March 9th, I would have the week of March 1st and 2nd, whatever. The 2nd is a Monday, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would have that week. Like I said, it's spring break, so I can take some time to try to get things together and sent out before our meeting, too, so we can maybe even talk
good.
About...
Would you
are we looking at Thursday the 12th? Or
Thursday at the same time we did today, does that work? That'd be the 12th.
Is it possible to back it up half an hour? Again, that would make it a little easier on me.
Yeah, I have a meeting that goes right up until that time, but it could be really close.
Yeah, I have class until 3:20.
Oh, so 3:30 is pretty much the earliest you can start.
Yeah, I could start at 3:15. I could let them out 5 minutes early. I don't think they would mind.
Do you want to try a different day? Would Tuesday work better?
That Tuesday, I've actually am packed in. I can't do Tuesday. I could do Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, or Thursday at the regular time.
I can do pretty much any of those. The only day that's not good for me is Friday. So, what about Wednesday?
Monday's not good.
Okay, so Wednesday.
So Wednesday's doable for me.
Yeah. So for me, either Wednesday anytime or Thursday at the time this time.
So what times work for people on Wednesday?
Wednesdays I could start
I
at 3 o'clock.
I'm sorry?
I have class until 2:50 on Wednesday.
So could we do it at 3 o'clock Central?
That's 3 o'clock Central. Huh?
1 o'clock West Coast, 4 o'clock Eastern, 10 p.m., Monica, I'm guessing?
Yep, that's right. That sounds good to me.
Okay, so March 11, Wednesday at, 1 o'clock Pacific, 3 and so forth.
1, 3,
okay.
4, 10.
So I can set that up again if you want to do that. And
That would be great, Dale.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, well, that all sounds real good. Every time we have these discussions, I find it kind of stimulating because these things are, they're troubling, and you recognize that if they're troubling for us, they can be really confusing for students. Students who think they're clear on it obviously don't know what they're doing.
And teachers, too.
Right.
Well, I'm going to sign off and say goodnight, everybody. I'll send this off to you in another day or two, Tisha. I'll finish up the part that I'm doing and then get it off to you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for all you've done.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle, for the work you've done on, and Tisha for taking it on, and we'll look forward to whatever you come up with. So.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to you in a month about.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Good night.
Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand.